powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
If I were a caller to this show right now, I think the thing that I would call in that I would just want to say all these hours later is that I'm just flat out mad. I'm not mad over any particular thing. I'm not mad at Pete because he bungled yet another end of game situation. I'm not mad at Russell because he overthrew the end zone a couple of times. I'm not mad at Hollister because he couldn't get in the end zone on the last play. I'm not mad at the officials. I'm just mad because in a very basic sense, I love my team, and I really just wanted them to win the darn game. That's all it came down to. The stakes were high from an emotional standpoint. We heard Mike and you guys have talked about the vibe there last night and Marshawn, and everything was just really set up for this joyous celebration, and it didn't happen. Now, who knows? Maybe that celebration is yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe it won't happen here. Maybe it'll happen just in our homes. Some, who knows? Still a lot that can shake out here. But that's what I was mad about last night. Now I feel like I'm ready to move on. How are you guys feeling? 866-979-3776 or 206-421-3776. Chris in Tacoma. Go ahead, Chris. What's up?
Hi. Yeah, I got a question, something that's kind of been bothering me all season that I've seen was a theme last night, too, that I don't see gets talked about a lot. And wonder if it's just me.
All right.
Tackling in the backfield. I feel like Clowney, Ziggy, Kendricks, Bobby, all those guys, the sack numbers are way down. But they seem to be in the backfield a lot and end up just tackling air. Like, I jump up off my couch celebrating because we got a guy right there, and then he's on the ground and the running back gets seven. It seems to be a theme all year, but I don't hear nobody talking about it. It drives me insane.
Well, I think we talk about it. I mean, we talked about the pass rush a bunch. If you're talking about the fact that you're mad about the fact that they're just this close and then it gets away, I'm not sure. But
yeah, it's more so you feel like you have them dead to rights, and then all of a sudden
they just get away.
They get away, and the perfect example of that to me was when George Kittle, they called a fly sweep to the tight end. Ziggy Ansah is right there,
yeah.
And Kittle sticks his foot in the ground and is gone, and poor Ziggy, it's like there's some players that one just like Clowney, he is a fluid athlete, man. There are other players that their neck is attached to their shoulders, and that's like Ziggy. If he's going to turn, he's got to turn his whole body, his whole shoulders and his head to get himself moving in the other direction, and that's just like when Kittle stuck his foot in the ground and just left Ziggy, he had no chance of recovering on that one.
Did you say most people have their neck
don't question
attached
it, Tom.
To their
shoulders? He's saying that people can't, that when they turn, it's like their whole
turn.
Top half.
You have, you have to turn your whole top half.
Okay.
That's a better way to describe it, Tom.
I couldn't resist just pointing it out. I'm sorry.
No, that's perfectly fine.
I apologize.
No, it is worth
unlike Clowney, whose head is not attached to his shoulders.
Yes.
Right, it floats in a little in a little bubble above.
Correct,
his
it's so
body.
Fluid. It just kind of hangs there. I think for in that sense, to me, yeah, those are big opportunities for tackles for loss that change down in distance, change momentum plays. So, you know, Chris, you're not wrong that it has been something that's come up all season long.
Randolph in Maple Valley, what's up, Randy? Sorry, we just can't hear you at all.
Bad connection.
We put him back on hold there. Maybe we'll come back to him in a second there. Mike is in Langley. What's up, Mike?
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I have kind of a problem. We've talked about the Carroll decisions, and the one that I haven't heard anybody mention too much was the decision to go for it in the first half when they could have kicked a reasonable field goal and broken the ice. And, you know, that's especially in the first half, that's, you know, kind of a, you play the percentages, and that was inexplicable. And that led to the fact in the fourth quarter, they were close enough for another reasonable field goal, but that wouldn't have done the job. If they would have gone for the 3 points in the first half, you know, in the game, you've got plenty of game in front of you. you would have had a whole different situation at the end of the game.
Mike, that's a fantastic point. And you look at this, and in terms of how the game was going at that moment, you felt like the Seahawks needed to get more than just 3 points at that time to get them going. But you are right. That also goes back to why sometimes you tend to play on the conservative nature, and why Pete Carroll has always fallen back onto that conservative nature of getting a field goal rather than trying to go for it on fourth down. It sometimes it comes up in these situations right here.
I feel like there's been so many times where Pete hasn't gone for it where I've wanted him to.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I don't even remember that situation last night.
No, you don't?
No.
To me, I was just so mad at the play design and the fact that you had Tyrone Swoops, your fourth string running
blocking?
Back. Blocking Nick Bosa.
Oh, yeah,
who is
yeah.
more of a receiving tight end than anything else.
That.
I mean, that
well,
was
Marshawn had the
was yeah, carry, it was yeah. a, it was absurd. To me, I was more upset about that than
just
you know
decision.
Not kicking the field goal. But to Mike's point, it changes the climate of the game. Now you're in a position where you don't need six; you only need three to win the football game. So that's where you're always the percentages and the analytics say go for it on fourth down. And there are high percentages and reasons for that, but that's why you can't knock going on a conservative nature and always trying to get points.
Randolph, we're going to try his phone again. Go ahead, Randolph.
Here I am. Can you hear me?
So far, go for it. Nope, sorry.
No!
Sorry. Oh, Randy.
Dang it, man. Two strikes here. I talked to him off the air, and Randolph was back. He was sounding good. He'd moved to a better space.
You know what? If he wants to call one more time and he actually gets through, we'll give him a third
I'll
strike.
Talk to him off the air, and then I'll just have to, like, pass it along.
Okay.
Be the messenger.
All right, that's fine. James is in Richland. What's up, James?
Hey, fellas. I just wanted to say, obviously, we're very frustrated with how it last night ended, but one thing I took away that got me screaming at the TV in the first half is I've always felt Russell is complemented very well with the running game. And in the first half, I mean, we were passing first down, second down. You know, I think you should have came out and just, you know, ran the ball with Marshawn in those first four or five drives. I know that they wanted to kind of get Homer in on the offense and get Marshawn in when they could. But that second half, Russell really started to dissect what the secondary was doing and moving the ball up and down the field. But if you look, he's being complemented by a great running game. And so it was very frustrating to see him do so well the second half that I have hopes, and it looks good going into potentially a third round matchup between the two of us. But I think that it looked good walking away knowing Russell knows what they're doing, and I feel like them, besides the Saints, is the biggest threat to us. But that's my takeaway.
By the second half, maybe they had figured it out. And you guys answer this question for me. Do you think that having Homer and having Lynch, two guys you're unsure about, was just a hazard going into that game? And so there's no way you could really know for certain what kind of results you were going to get with the running game in that first half.
Yeah, I think I would have let Marshawn start just for that boost, just to see what you had with him, just to kind of gauge what they were doing and how he'd play. But I'm fine with the decision to lean on Homer for that. You need to build his confidence, build his reps. He's going to be your de facto starter or see the bulk of carries. And
I don't
he did
have a
last
problem
night.
With
and
that
he also performed
all,
really
way.
Well.
He did. I thought he had a terrific game.
He was
game.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
He was really good last night. And, you know, for Homer, I was really happy for him because this is a guy that as soon as he's come in, he worked extremely hard and was always a guy that flashed in practice. And so it was always somebody you talked about in the offseason. But
I want to ask you guys this question real quick before we get to four downs. If we had known, say by week six of the season, that Homer was capable of doing what he did last night and he were healthy mm-hmm. more often than Penny, would he have taken Penny's spot in that rotation?
I don't know if he would have taken Penny's
Just
spot.
Just think about it.
I was thinking about it this morning when me, Jessamine, and Lydia were kind of talking about the idea that was Homer buried in the depth chart and deserved a better chance. But I just think that was a genuinely deep running back group. You had Carson, who was kind of head and shoulders above everyone else and your clear starter, and Homer wasn't going to beat him out. No one was beating Carson.
No, I didn't think it beat
him
out.
But I think that Penny came in with kind of a reputation of, is he a bust? How's this going to work out? But improved and had a lot of burst, a lot of speed. He was also, I think they probably thought maybe he could take more hits than Homer could. He was a bit of a bigger guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, with ProSize, they've always liked his versatility. Anyone that's questioning why they still keep him, one, he's on a rookie deal. Secondly, when he's not injured, he is their most versatile running back.
Right, but he's never healthy anyway. So yeah. Homer could have beaten him out.
It is interesting from the standpoint of when you ask that question, I don't think there really is any chance that Homer had to beat out Rashad Penny just in the pecking order of things. But it is fascinating to me that he never really got a chance to beat out CJ ProSize. And when Penny was injured earlier in the year, they just went heavy Chris Carson because they didn't want to lean on CJ ProSize or Travis Homer. And all this time, they actually had a pretty capable back and a guy who could be reliable in Homer.
Yeah, and maybe
so
now maybe
that's where
not,
he could have got more reps.
Right, and maybe it's not necessary to even worry about it now because they got a great year out of Carson.
Correct.
Right, they just leaned on him, and that's the way that it went. Fine, but I'm just curious. Health being the, I guess the what do we call it? The line of demarcation there. Mm-hmm. If Homer's healthy, Penny's not. I just wonder. That's all. Mm-hmm. Merritt in Moses Lake. What do you got, Merritt?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but I really think Seattle can beat the Eagles this weekend. It will be tougher for the Niners to beat us in the span of 3 weeks. Tough for us to beat them twice on the road in 1 year.
Are you asking us if we think it's tougher for the 49ers to beat us or us beat them in the span of 2 weeks?
Right, yeah.
Man, I think it probably depends on where the game is, and in this case, it would be in San Francisco. I think that gives them a little bit of an advantage. And also, Stacey, like you were saying a couple of minutes ago, who's healthier? And it looks like...
The 49ers.
Unless Jimmy Garoppolo or George Kittle breaks their leg in the divisional round.
They are undoubtedly healthier.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are healthier. I think the Seahawks are getting healthier, right? When you look at Diggs potentially coming back, I think that obviously gives them a big boost. You'll have Shaquille Griffin back. Michael Kendricks being gone is a big blow, but it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do personnel-wise, if that'll even matter at that point. And it'll be interesting to see what Dwayne Brown can do, because if you remember, DK Metcalf got the same procedure done on his knee.
Mm-hmm.
It took him 2 weeks. It only took him 2 weeks. So could Dwayne Brown be back against the 49ers? I think that could definitely be a potential.
John is in Bonnie Lake. What's up, John?
Good morning, guys. I got smoked on social media last night because I was suggesting that losing the game, being the 5 seed and going through Philadelphia and then San Francisco was a better path forward than winning, playing the Vikings and trying to think, I believe the Saints would be in the next round. And I wanted to get your guys' take on should I have been smoked on social media or not?
Well, who was smoking you, first of all? Was it one of us?
No. It was on Facebook with all the...
Oh, you know, Facebook. Don't worry about anybody on Facebook. Come on.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. Look, it's definitely something we've actually... Tom, you brought this up weeks ago, right? We've talked about this for quite a while. You threw out the scenario. Is it better for them to face Dallas or Philadelphia being the 5 seed or you know, trying to... you know, get a first round bye. And so.
And worrying about having to go to New Orleans. I don't want to go to New Orleans for any reason.
Correct. The probability, though, is that the road is going to go through New Orleans.
Right.
We don't
know right now who we would face in the second round because if the Vikings win or Philadelphia. Who are the Vikings playing?
Vikings are playing New Orleans.
Right, so that changes things going forward.
Correct. I am not banking on Kirk Cousins beating the Saints. It could happen. It could happen. But I'm not banking on it in that sense. And I don't think Green Bay is for real. So I really do think the road is going to go through either San Francisco or it's going to go through New Orleans. And to me, you look at these matchups, I feel really good about against the Eagles, and I feel really good at going up against the 49ers just from that standpoint of I think this team for the Seahawks, they have a ton of confidence going against them, and they've got a major chip on their shoulder heading into that one. So I kind of like the road that's going. Inevitably, you're going to go to the Superdome. in that case.
I feel like Green Bay got lucky yesterday. Play that draw.
It was gross.
Drawing the Lions week 17 with that backup quarterback. What was his name?
David Blau.
Blau?
Don't you botch his name, Tom Wassel.
I mean, it made me long for the days of Dan Orlovsky out there. I mean, that's how bad it was. It was when they got the ball back that last time, I thought there's no way they're not turning the ball over here. So they got lucky. Elena out in University Place. What's up, Elena?
Hello?
Yeah. What do you got?
Hey. Yeah. Hey. So I'm just noticing, I don't understand why Shoddy doesn't recognize that the blueprint has been laid out how to play the Niners. It's been said on all the NFL shows. You play them the way the Rams played them in the second game and the Cardinals. You don't line up toe-to-toe against that defense. You got to get them on the edges, your reverses, motion, just starting out so you get them chasing. They were gassed playing the Rams in the second game. We don't play that way. Pete Carroll's mentality is line up, go toe-to-toe, you beat us. It doesn't work against that front. Their physicality is just too much for Seattle's. You got to get that motion and get Russell pulling, running, moving, reverses, jet sweeps from the get-go to get those linebackers, everybody chasing and wearing down. They play him completely wrong. And another point, everyone keeps saying that Seattle was down a lot of men. You got to realize 49ers are still down a lot of defensive men. So when we meet up with them again, they're going to have more guys back on that front line. They are just completely bigger and more physical, and you play them all wrong. And I don't get how Shoddy does not know that. It's been talked about on the NFL shows at length. How to beat them is to play them like McVay plays them and the Cardinals play them. You got to use motion and speed, not line up toe to toe.
Aren't those two coaches two guys who didn't beat the 49ers this year?
Correct, but that was because their defense wasn't as good. But the Cardinals were up 16-0. Their defense couldn't stop anything later. But their offense, they were up on them. They had them chasing. They were gassed, and the commentators even said that this is the blueprint.
Elena, I think that's a fine point, but I mean, in both games, the Seahawks have scored a ton of points against them. I don't know that that's necessarily the problem. I'm sorry,
Elena.
Well, she made like 5 points there. So
she made fire points.
She made very good points, but you know what?
Great caller.
Yeah. I like that.
No, great caller.
University play, so Jake also like that.
Yeah, that's what that is.
But who cares what the commentators on the NFL Network are saying? They're not coaching the team.
Correct. That is.
What do you want to do?
Correct.
Run fly sweeps with Tyler Lockett all day long? That's what's going to beat the 49ers? Come on.
No.
I don't mind her points, though.
No, she's got good points in the sense that through the game, you want to be able to wear them out.
She does.
You want to be able to make them run sideline to sideline. And the part that she was bringing up is wearing them down and getting them tired. Well, what we saw in the second half was that very same thing happened, was eventually they wore down through the running game and the running style in which the Seahawks were attacking, and then Russell got into it and started feeling
good. I wish Russell would run more anyway. I mean, I agree with Elena's point that if you want to gas that defense, Russell's got to run a little bit more earlier in the game. Whether it's him deciding to run earlier on a scramble play or just whether it's by design, that will tire out a defense.
It does. It is demoralizing.
It happens every time. The reason why they were able to move the ball at will last night was in part because of that, because Russell was doing that very thing. He was taking the ball himself by the end.
He was moving around. I do think in the first half that he was – Actually, they had him keep the ball a couple different times. His willingness, usually you don't see his willingness to take off until the fourth quarter. It's really where you see it. I saw his willingness to run with the football, but there was also indecision as to sticking your foot in the ground and just going. And Nick Bosa and those guys just continue playing hard and chasing him down. That's something that you don't really see very often in those games. But you saw that when you give him opportunities to step up in the pocket and make the threat of the run, he was very effective in those scenarios in that second half. And you just hope that they can find a groove faster than just waiting till the second half to get things going.
Stacey, you want to run some more jet sweeps?
I'm fine with it. I'm okay with it. David Moore out there, he's a speedy guy. Tyler Lockett. They were so into that last year with Tyler Lockett.
Were they?
Yeah. They ran a few of them.
I'm not saying they were. I'm just having trouble remembering.
Yeah.
I'm misremembering, is this it?
I mean, they're never going to be like Kansas City, but they got pretty creative with Lockett.
Right. Or the Rams, for example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Steve is in Port Orchard. What's up, Steve?
So, yeah, I was thinking about having to beat the 49ers three times in a row. Obviously, I feel like the Seahawks and the 49ers are probably the best teams in the NFC. I think Teddy Bridgewater gave us a different look when we lost to the Saints than Drew Brees does. So basically losing that game at home, I think, kind of gives us more of a reset, retool, and if we make it to that next round, then I think we have a better chance.
Well, if you were to pick, I mean, this is going to sound obvious, but if you were to pick two out of the three games to win again, potentially against San Francisco, obviously you want to win the last one.
Correct.
And not the second one, having already won the first one. So, yeah, I guess. I mean, had they won last night.
They were so close to doing it.
I know they were. Just imagine this scenario. If they won last night, and then we were going to face them in the conference championship.
You're tricking me into your division take, Tom.
I know. Well, but would you be less or more confident than you are right now?
More confident because I would, well, by a very slim margin. I actually have more confidence in this team, even after a loss last night, than I did after Arizona. So I don't know that a win or a loss when it came down to inches would have swayed me that much.
So everything that shook out of last night's game, the loss, the chip on the shoulder, just everything is making you more confident going forward.
They performed better last night against a better team in really significant areas, like third down. They were 57% on third down. They converted 1 of 12 against the Cardinals, 32nd ranked defense.
I don't count the Cardinal game because I was on a plane when it was going on.
Okay, that's fair. That game never happened.
It never happened. I don't even acknowledge it.
A lot of people that would do it that way.
That would be a nice way to, you know, think about that. And we did. We did move on very quickly because of the news of Marshawn Lynch that Monday that Pete Carroll gave us.
Oh, did that come out Monday?
That came out Monday.
So you got, after a loss, you got Marshawn, and then you got, were you here Christmas Eve?
Oh, we didn't even mention that Arizona Cardinals loss.
We barely talked about it.
We did not mention the
game. We barely talked about it.
Pete Carroll's plan worked.
So, wait, were you here Christmas Eve?
No.
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 Oh, so you got Marshawn, then you were off for 2 days.
Yeah, because Pete was on Danny and Gallant Monday morning and said, Marshawn's on a plane right now. He's coming in here to make a difference.
We had 2-plus hours of open phone lines about Marshawn
People
Lynch.
Could not stop talking about Marshawn.
It was 12:45 to 3 o'clock.
I don't blame you. I mean, that couldn't have worked out any better for you guys.
That was incredible. But
hopefully we get a win next Sunday. Otherwise, are we playing Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday. If they win,
it's
they
the later
play
game
Saturday.
Sunday.
The later game on
week.
Sunday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they don't, we're in trouble.
Going back to Marshawn Lynch.
Oh, God. Yeah, will he be on the team
Marshawn
next
Lynch,
year?
2020.
We're going to talk about that for the next 8 months. All right, halftime show's next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It is the halftime show. 3 big stories. I guess really we had 1. Seahawks lost last night. And, you know, I was mad about it. How are you guys feeling right after the game?
I'm okay.
You're okay?
You know, it was...
Well, selfishly, I like covering wins because everyone's in a good mood.
Do you have passion?
Passion?
Yeah, are you a passionate person?
I mean, I think I watch the game through a different lens. Yeah.
Is it a passionate lens?
Is it a passionate lens or is it
It's not a passionate fan lens.
Okay.
But I understand that lens. I totally get it. And I have a rooting interest in that. I think that this team is more interesting when they win. There's just all kinds of questions that come in as to how it happens. There's just as many questions when they lose, but it's just more awkward to talk to people.
Sure. Well, I'm just glad that you're not one of those people who says, I'm passionate, when you're not.
Ooh.
Oh, I see it, Tom.
Like people, like everybody thinks they have a great sense of humor, but like, you know, 10% of people actually do.
I wasn't passionate in that I wasn't angry after the loss, but I was understandable.
You don't ruin the typical fan way where you smash furniture.
I did not smash any furniture.
Okay.
You know what the weird thing was for me when I watched that was I was nervous, anxious, frustrated, mad at different points, but then when they lost and it was ultimately ruled that it wasn't a touchdown, I wasn't really mad. I was just I was amazed at the point that they got themselves there.
Yes.
In that moment, that in the second half, that the way it was going in the first, and they got themselves to 19-14 and then gave up that touchdown to make it 26-14, and the fact that they were they won and then got themselves again, I was just shocked that they were in that position to begin with. And it was kind of like, okay, I'm glad that they showed some life here and they showed that they can get themselves in this position moving forward into the playoffs, because they needed that to happen. Could you imagine Arizona Cardinal loss and then get blown out by the 49ers?
That's a good point.
It would have been a very different conversation.
Yes, it would have been far more disheartening had they been blown out.
Sure.
I think to come within inches, literal inches, according to Jake, within inch of a win was a big deal.
I don't know. Last night, in the moment, though, it felt like, oh my God, I'm about to scale Mount Everest. And then something weird happens, but I overcame that. And then another weird thing happens, and I overcame that.
But you still didn't get to the
and
top.
Then, right, and then Hollister catches it, and I might have gotten across, I don't know. And then I fell off the mountain. After all that, I mean that's how it felt.
Then you get into this big philosophical question about, well, is it better to just be blown out and know from the first quarter that you were going to lose?
No.
Or were you more disheartened getting that close?
No, it's just more boring. I mean, I'm with you guys. I'm glad that the Seahawks didn't get blown out, because I'm more confident today on Monday going forward to face Philadelphia that they can win that game than if they had gotten blown out last night.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say it, of the two possible outcomes, facing Philadelphia or facing
Minnesota
here, I think playing Philadelphia when they're down to basically nobody, we'll see about DeSean Jackson. I think that that's a better matchup for Seattle.
It's not going to be a cakewalk. Carson Wentz has only improved as the years gone.
He has.
Okay.
He's
favored by a point.
Can we debunk this, though?
What?
Can we debunk this situation? I'm sorry, Tom, because it's gonna come as a little bit of a jab. But the Philadelphia Eagles, who were they playing to finish out that season?
I don't care about
that. They finished the NFC East. They played the Giants twice. They played the Washington Redskins. They played Dallas Cowboys.
How dare you?
I'm sorry to put that little jab into your Giants.
Dude,
I'm sorry.
They're a really good team. They're 4-12, and they tried
those
really
four
hard.
Wins were earned.
Yeah, they just fired their coach,
and you know
they
what?
Tried.
See,
they were
this is why I didn't want to go there, Tom. I knew this is where how you were going to react.
That team should be 10-4.
Wait, so who's Philadelphia?
Or more, just that's it. They didn't play the last two games.
Who's Philadelphia beaten?
Well, their last, four games, they lost to Miami.
Yes,
so Miami's a great team.
So did New England yesterday.
They beat the Giants, they beat Washington, and then they beat the Cowboys, and then they beat the Giants.
Woo!
You know,
they also this year have wins over Chicago and Buffalo.
But they got hot at the end of
the
year, didn't they?
They
did. What's their record in their last five games?
In their last...
Are they 4-5?
4-1.
Sorry, 4-1 in their last five.
So
games.
If you believe that they are getting hot, I just think that it's one of those things. It's a false positive. It's one of those things where they are looking better. Carson Wentz is performing better, but it's also because they have faced lesser teams in this league, and it's been really impressive what Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson have been able to do to finish it out 9-7 and win the division. But to me, I don't look at the Philadelphia Eagles and go, man, they're on fire now.
You know, one thing I would normally say is that their quarterback is playoff tested, except he isn't.
You guys.
Because Nick Foles isn't there anymore. I'll give him one advantage. Doug Peterson. Doug Peterson is an excellent, he's proven himself over the last couple of years to be an excellent playoff coach.
He scares me.
I think going on the road up against Doug Peterson, who should get every bit of credit for that team getting into this position, as anybody else, I think going up against him could be a problem.
I fully agree with that.
I'm wondering if this text on our text line sums up the way a lot of fans are feeling today.
Okay.
From the 509, my mood, this is the first loss of the year. I can listen to the radio the following day, feeling excited for the playoffs.
That's a good way to put it.
Huh. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I like that because... It's a new season. I mean, honestly, the way that Pete Carroll treated the Arizona Cardinal game, it feels like we're doing this back-to-back weeks almost, except we're talking about this 49er game, is you really have to turn the page. I mean, the 49er game, you have to learn lessons from it, but ultimately it's a new season. It's 1-0. You can't linger and worry about the implications of what happened in this last game yesterday. it's about going 1-0 and worrying, putting all your focus into Philadelphia. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I think coming in after the Saints game, when the only conversation was, how do we stop Chris Carson from fumbling? Probably wasn't a day when your friend there on the text wanted to come in and listen to us.
After the Rams and Cardinals, wasn't listening to it.
Next. Injury problems. We still got them. Michael Kendricks, ACL. But we haven't confirmed that yet, right?
No, it was reported this morning by Ian Rappaport that he's out for the year with a torn ACL. Pete Carroll was asked about it on Danny and Gallant this morning and said they have not received tests back yet. But Pete Carroll obviously talking at 3 p.m. today, so maybe they'll have them then.
It'll be interesting because if it is an ACL with Michael Kendricks, man, that's a big blow, but also it makes you wonder if it's going to make this team and Pete Carroll and Ken Norton actually start leaning into nickel defense instead of Cody Barton filling in and then playing 60 to 70% base defense in the entire game. That will be interesting to watch.
Instead
forward.
Of playing 60
yeah,
to 70%?
Yeah, moving to nickel defense and matching personnel. So meaning if they bring out base personnel, that's when you do it. If they bring out nickel personnel, we are going to bring out our nickel corner in Ugo Amadi instead of continuing to leave that third linebacker on the field. That will be really interesting to me.
We need to talk more about the return of Marshawn Lynch. That was a major, major storyline that I think should continue to change the season going forward. We'll talk about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
So amidst all the chaos last night, there were different times during the game where the camera, the NBC camera, just panned to the sideline, and you saw one Marshawn Lynch standing there in uniform in his old number, 24, staring. It looked like he was looking up at the scoreboard or at the screen for most of the game when he was down there. But in those moments, we fans, at least this fan, said to himself a number of times, I cannot believe that at what I'm looking at right now. like if you were to, forget about if you were to ask me a week ago or going through that scenario, like, I cannot believe I'm looking at Marshawn Lynch in a blue Seahawk uniform in this game of all games, week 17, the game we've been counting down to essentially for 17 weeks. I'm looking at Marshawn Lynch in a Seahawk uniform. It
was surreal.
It was so crazy that it almost didn't feel crazy.
And the crazy thing was, is when Stacy and I were doing the show and you were gone, you know, phone lines and tweets and texts and, you know, onto the text line, I just can't wait to see Marshawn Lynch in a uniform. I don't care about his production. And for me, all week, I was like, heck with that. I want this guy to perform. You're bringing this guy out to help you win a game.
Yeah, I thought he might play really well.
But I will tell you this. The moment I saw him in the uniform on the broadcast, it just hit me. Like, oh my gosh, beast mode is back. And just seeing him in that uniform, not even seeing it down yet, just got me excited, brought that energy it just brought me back to those years, man, and it was just, okay, I get it. I get what people are saying.
He finished with 34 yards, 2.8 yards per carry, but it felt like so much more than that. I don't think the stat line was indicative of his impact on that game.
Those two big runs he had, or quote-unquote
the back-to-back runs,
I felt like took that stadium for a second and elevated it or whatever. I mean,
absolutely.
You were there.
Yeah.
It felt like that?
It felt like that. There are a few, not every game, but there are some games when there's so much crowd noise that the press box shakes.
Yep.
And the press box isn't this like little wooden, it's part of the stadium, so you feel the stadium shaking.
Like a treehouse?
Yeah. The touchdown was one of them, him leaping over defenders. And another moment were those two back-to-back runs.
If there were a prop bet, you know how we do prop bets for the Super Bowl. If there were a prop bet that Marshawn Lynch was going to score a touchdown versus not, would you have taken that?
Yeah, I would have. Just from the sense, I told people when they signed him that people are knocking on him because he hadn't played in 14 games, which is a legitimate deal. It's very fair. But if there's anybody that could come into this game and this situation, have an impact and actually play well, it's Marshawn Lynch. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's just one of those players that is a transcendent player with his running style and what he can do. So
he was rested, of all things.
It would not have surprised me to know that he was going to score.
I think there are also some coaches that would not have given Lynch a shot. They would have not just a shot to sign with the team, but I mean, even if they would have signed him to, I think some people would have felt like it was just a ceremonial move to hand off the ball or give him a chance at a touchdown. I don't think that Pete Carroll sees it that way. And even if he sees it as I'm giving a guy a shot, he's just got this way about him. Say what you will about his coaching mistakes, like we've done earlier this morning. He's got a way about him where he really believes in his players. And that sounds like coach speak, but he really does. And I think that with that, you get moments out of players that another coach can't, and that touchdown run was one of them.
I think that's true. After the touchdown run, actually, they showed Pete's face on the sideline, and he was definitely strutting up and down the
sideline. Yeah, you're telling me that 31 other coaches do that?
No way. In fact, as we sit here, I'm trying to think of
examples.
Belichick
would never, unless he truly felt that he would win. There are some coaches that do what it takes to win, and then there are some coaches that kind of have little Hail Mary moments or little moments where they think, like, I believe enough in this guy, and I kind of believe that things will line up right, and it doesn't make logical sense, but I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go with my gut.
Belichick brought back Deion Branch, actually. I'm not sure how much production he tried to get out of him. He had him in that Super Bowl season.
You know what I'm saying, though? I think that it was...
I don't think there are that many coaches that would do it. I'm trying to think of other guys who have come back after being out of the game.
And not only with that, but the history, the negative history that happened.
Yeah.
As Marshawn left, it wasn't a positive.
Didn't it
feel
like there was a Super Bowl 49 undertone to the whole day?
It did, and that's why I think a lot of people are frustrated and mad that second and one never happened, and that we never would. We don't know.
Which is kind of funny because, as Salk mentioned, Marshawn came back after that Super Bowl, played the entire next season, but still, it seemed to everyone like it came down to that game as the redemption for that goal line play. When really, he already played the entire 2015 season after that. It was just kind of funny.
Wait, you think last night was going to be redemption?
Well,
it was
like
that's
last
how
night,
it was talked
unfinished
about.
Business.
Absolutely,
here's
it was
his
talked
chance.
About that
he
way.
He can score from the one.
How many? And that wasn't the only 1 yard line situation.
No.
How many times did you see jokes when he did get that 1 yard touchdown when people said throw a slant?
Or the first time the play before he scored when they actually they ran play action. Marshawn got interfered with.
Yeah.
So they actually did get to the one. We're going to let Marshawn score, but we're still going to throw it.
I saw
which the irony would have been
that
unbelievable.
Play in Super Bowl 49 will forever be a part of Seahawks history, and it will come up in any moment that somewhat resembles it. And that moment resembled it in a lot of ways.
Well, I think you said it just now. You said that there was an undertone. There definitely was. Even today, right the next day, us asking each other, who do you point the finger at the most?
Pete, that's the same conversation
Russell,
we were having.
Marshawn.
Yes.
I mean, it's that type of play. Now, I guess we blame Shoddy a little bit. Who's the other? Chad Morton would be the other guy. Look, I don't blame Shoddy as much. He's the one who's got to call the plays, right? It's not his job to get the players wrangled on the sidelines ready to go in.
If he has – look, the part that I'm curious about is if there was delay in terms of what they wanted to do. Did they have the play ready to go and called? If they did in proper time and fashion, and then the breakdown was they didn't get the proper people onto the field, or they didn't get Marshawn onto the field, that falls on to the coach. It falls on two people. It falls on the person that's in charge of personnel. There's one guy. So, you know, Shoddy will say, hey, I want zebra personnel in the game, right? And I hope that this right here is making the sound.
It does.
No, it sounds a fish.
Yeah, it sounds very secretive.
Keep doing that.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So he would go, all right, I want zebra personnel. So then you would have the personnel guy yell out, hey, zebra, zebra, zebra. Then they would go on the field. It's also
so that's like the quarterback coach or the wide receiver coach or someone else on staff.
Exactly. And it falls to that person. Then it will go to your position coach to make sure that the player in your position group is getting out on the field. So there's a chain of command that happens, and clearly there was a breakdown in the chain of command to get everything properly communicated and onto the field.
They had 40 seconds, though, is the thing.
That can't happen.
In between a regular set of plays, you have less time. Like, I understand, like, you get in a rhythm and the guy calls out zebra or whatever it is, sends him in. In this case, though, what bothers me is that they actually had more time.
Marshawn ran onto the field with 22 seconds on the play clock. So that's when you hear Collinsworth say, "Here comes Marshawn Lynch."
So then, 22 seconds, he's out on the field.
So they're already halfway through it, though.
They're halfway through it, but that's still enough time to get the play called. They take Marshawn back off the field. Did they not? They
put him on it.
I thought he only went. Someone can text in if you've seen it more recently. From what I remember from last night, Marshawn came back out, and I only think that they changed personnel when they got that delay a game and were moved back. But maybe I'm wrong.
They didn't even get
Marshawn,
out of the huddle.
Marshawn was off the field after the delay of game. I know that for a fact.
Okay, so
he didn't run on the field.
Once they got back to the six, changed personnel again, and Marshawn came out of the game.
Because they weren't going to run the ball with Marshawn from the 6-yard line.
So then that is a breakdown, clearly, on Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer in terms of what are we doing in this moment. That's where it falls. If Marshawn's on the field 22 seconds and they don't get it out in time, that's either on the play caller or it's on the quarterback.
You're asking what happened in those 22 seconds. Was everybody just standing around looking at each other, or what was going on in those 22 seconds?
This is so good. This is like breaking down the Zapruder film.
So then they turn it around and Marshawn comes back off. They change the personnel. That is an indecision in play calling.
No, but they had to do that, though. They knew that they were throwing it at that point.
But again, it leads to the fact that you're in this situation. You got one personnel out on the field. You're changing the personnel with less than 20 seconds to go. They didn't come out of the huddle one time.
They didn't. I don't think they changed personnel, though, at 22 seconds to go. They changed personnel after the clock had run up, and they called them for delay of game.
Well, they changed personnel twice.
So they changed it once in that 40-second window and after the ball.
They were in a set that had no running backs on the field.
Right, they clocked the ball.
So for second down, they needed to get running backs on the field. They rushed Marshawn on. They took too long. Got the delay of game. Then they changed personnel again.
Which they had to.
Yes, because they're now at the six, and they didn't need Marshawn in there as their goal.
Right, the question is, once they send in Marshawn, and then the play clock goes down to zero, what was happening in there? Why wasn't a play sent in? Was there a play sent in? If they did, why didn't they run it?
Correct. That's where it comes down to, and that's where the question of all of this comes out. I mean, it's
pretty
fascinating.
Were these questions asked? Oh, man.
It's pretty fascinating. No, they were not.
Before we throw to break, I have one bit of news about we didn't get to the Cowboys coaching changes.
Can we save it for around the corner?
We can save it for around the corner.
Let's do it. 710 ESPN Seattle.